Did you know you could sponsor Nerd and Tie? That's right, for $20 we'd say your name here and maybe something nice about you. Just go to nerdandtie.com and click on the sponsor information for more information. I said information there twice, or you can support our legal fund at gofundme.com/nerdandtie. On this episode of Nerd and Tie, we talk about The Last Jedi in our spoiler-free review. Disney is buying Fox. Alita Battle Angel is horrifying just all of us. And a jury rules that Salt Lake Comic-Con violated San Diego Comic-Con's trademark. All this plus the mailbag and some magic here on Nerd and Tie. Yeah.
Yeah. A
little bit of holiday magic for y'all. I'm wearing my Santa hat because I'm in the spirit.
Technically wearing my MST3K ugly Christmas sweater. It's just under my sweatshirt.
I'm wearing my Autobot t-shirt, and since I used to always get Transformers for Christmas, I think it counts.
Oh.
And for those of you who are unaware of who we are, this is Nerd and Tie, the only podcast on the internet with a dress code. I am Trey Dorn. Joining me, as always, are the splendiferous Nick Izumi.
I am the Last Jedi. Disappointing, I know.
And the centrally located Genprock.
Sup.
And this is it's been kind of a we used to always record on Sundays. Remember that? Like remember that world we used to live in?
I know it's been a bad last few months. It's been really bad, you guys.
Busy and hectic, insane.
I mean, I'm glad that at least that Skype appears to be working.
A step up from last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, but hopefully the video is roughly synchronized with YouTube for like the two people who watch the video version versus the, you know, hundreds and thousands who listen to the audio version.
Shout out to both of you.
What
you?
So this is gonna be our last regular episode of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, because next time we got to do our year-end recap.
Yeah, our best and worst of 2017 is going to be our next episode. So, it's exciting. Now it's the end of the year though, which means Nick is leaving. I don't know. We did.
Bye, Nick.
I'm fine. Audio. My cat just wanted to leave the room. I didn't even know she was in the room.
Oh,
but turns out she was in
audio,
the room.
Audio listeners don't know that Nick got out of his chair. And
yeah.
So it's just, but anyways.
Teach your cats how to doorknob.
Jeez.
Come on.
Man. So it's, so we're off to a rocking start here of just like staying on task. Anyways, it's the end of the year, which to go back to my original segue into our opening story is, which means, like most recent years, it meant we got a Star Wars because we got through the whole year.
Yep.
Yay.
Yay. Did it.
And
we got a Star War.
So The Last Jedi obviously came out this last weekend, and we've written, a full review on the website full of spoilers, but we're going to talk about it spoiler free on the podcast for those of you who, you know, just have been too busy around the holidays to get out there yet. So,
like me,
because Gen hasn't seen it. Nick and I have seen it, but Gen hasn't seen it.
It's retail.
So we're going to talk about the movie, in a spoiler-free fashion, which is going to be difficult, but we're going to try and we're going to go for it. But if you want to at least you see my spoiler-filled thoughts, you can go to the website, and I'm sure that if Nick has time, he'll put something about his thoughts in more detail on the internet somewhere, and you can.
I'm actually hoping to record something with a friend this week. So
yeah, and so we'll post that if he gets that up soon to the website.
If I get that up, yeah.
but So Star Wars, The Last Jedi, Rian Johnson wrote and directed it, and it's pretty solid.
I loved this movie.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm, like, there doesn't seem to be a lot of middle ground, and I'm not going to help that. I am firmly in the love category.
Like, I have criticisms, which are in my review, which I can't really go into because it would constitute spoilers. But overall, I thought this was great. I think it is by far the most visually beautiful Star Wars film ever made.
I can see that.
I am 100% like, and there's a lot of the visual language of, actually what Rian Johnson did really well is obviously one of the strongest influences on the original trilogy. The two biggest strongest influences were movie serials and samurai films. And I think what Rian Johnson did very well was borrowing from the visual language of Kurosawa in ways that...
Yes, I agree.
Like, I can't tell you how. Like, there are very specific things that... But what's interesting is that they are visuals that, even though that there's a lot of heavy Kurosawa influence in the original trilogy, these aren't visual cues that we saw in the original trilogy. So it's, like, it feels of the fabric of that. Without being repetitive.
I also feel that a large chunk of the third act owes a lot to a book by T.H. White. Like, a lot. And I'm debating if saying that book would narrow things down too much.
Yeah, don't.
But it's... Specifically, T.H. White's version of this series of events, I feel that it owes a lot to.
Yeah, it's. I think that the people who don't like it, I know that there's a lot of anger through the rando signing petition to have it struck from canon. Like, what did they?
Yeah, there is actually a push for that, but.
But it makes no sense. Like, well, first off, what it is that I don't think it's a spoiler, especially since it's within the first, like, his first scene, this is apparent. So I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the Luke Skywalker we find in this film is a much more cynical, darker character than the Luke Skywalker that a lot of us spent our time growing up with in the EU. You know?
But the expanded universe doesn't matter.
It got left
in the garbage bin.
I know, mm-hmm. I agree. And it's even Mark Hamill initially, like, was not happy with the way the character being in this mental state. But I think that that was the hardest thing for me was just letting myself forget the legends, Luke Skywalker, and where he is at a later point in his life, and letting me rethink the character based on the events of... Because we know in Episode 7 that... He started a new Jedi Academy and he failed. And Kylo Ren, you know, created the Knights of Ren and they killed a bunch of the other students. We know that from Episode 7. So technically that's an Episode 7 spoiler, but it's been out for 2 years. And I think after 2 years, I'm safe to say that.
I'm noticing that from people and like the Luke thing. And that didn't bother me in the slightest, but I also have no exposure to the EU with Luke in it. Like, well, I feel bad. One of our listeners actually gave me the first book of the Thrawn trilogy. I haven't read it yet, have zero interest in... it's not that I have zero interest, but I don't really care about Luke's Jedi Order and all the stuff built around it and Kyle's stupid actual Star Wars Mary Sue Katarn.
Well, like, there's good stuff in the EU, but there's so much bad that, like, I would say the Thrawn trilogy is worth reading.
I was about to say, like, there's the Thrawn trilogy, there's a couple Dark Horse comics I really got into, and then I really don't feel like I missed much else.
Some of the Kevin J. Anderson stuff is great. And then, I could, like, make you a short list of stuff that's actually decent. And I could also make you a list of things to never touch. But, Like, there's a reason why the Thrawn trilogy is great, and there's a reason why there are elements from that that are in canon. Like, even before Thrawn was introduced into the official canon through Rebels, like, even during the prequels, Coruscant, or however you're supposed to pronounce it, was created by Timothy Zahn that then got introduced into the prequels. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Didn't realize that.
The concept of the city planet had kind of been Lucas's idea, but the name literally comes from the Thrawn trilogy.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it's like, but I think what happened is so the version of Luke Skywalker in the extended universe is a very pure person. And so what's happened is that effectively Fan and Luke, once you divorce the EU, like from the films, you just have the films. Luke Skywalker is not this pure character, like, made of snow. You know, it's he no. almost falls to the dark side in the original trilogy.
Yeah.
Like, he's on the edge. Like, and so I think that,
I feel like what people want is a boring character.
They do.
I'm just saying that. What they want is a boring... This goes back to my same problem that I have with so many nerds when it comes to this sort of thing, is that they have a shining image of what their Paragon characters should be, and they lose their minds if they're not living up to that.
Yeah.
So
I see, like, the petition, like, specifically talks about how they felt that Luke was done a disservice, but I think, and this is as specific as I can get, that Luke's personal, like, character arc in this film is vital to this film and is an amazing character arc. And Mark Hamill is perfect in every way in this film.
I've noticed something in reactions to this movie from people who were very critical of it. And I'm talking criticism where I can actually almost try to understand where people are coming from, not because they're just racist, sexist bags of poop.
Right, right, right.
Which a lot of the critiques I'm hearing are. But I've heard some people try to say that it's a disservice to the original series characters that everything they worked for got undone by the First Order, and that Luke is jaded and cynical, and that is a disservice to mythology, because that's not, because that might be how things work in the real world, but in mythology it isn't. To which I have to say to those people, no, you are wrong. Mythology has always been wrong. About... Yeah, exactly. Gens with me over here, like, that's what these things are always about. Mythology is always about heroes. Like, the idea of the hero being victorious and happily ever after, in a mythological sense, is a very new concept and a very American concept.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a reason why it seems like recent attempts to do King Arthur movies always end with Arthur, you know, having a major victory and not doing the end of the story, you know.
To be fair, Merlin.
Okay, Merlin, the TV series, but that was produced by the BBC. So, once again, Americans are afraid to do that ending. They're afraid of that ending where our hero becomes jaded, hurt, gives up on everything, and is eventually forced to confront his treacherous nephew in order to give hope to the next generation.
Yeah.
See what I did there? Some of you see what I did there. Anyway.
But so I'm hugely, like, on board about this film. Like, it's there are a couple of, I've got a couple of, like, all my stuff are nitpicks, like.
Same.
And actually, one of my biggest ones is a problem I have with Empire, and Empire is amazing.
I liked this more than Seven. I'm going to go so far as to say that. There were a lot of things that happened that I wasn't expecting, and it took me off guard in a good way.
So what I'm going to say about this is that I'm not going to be able to tell whether I like it more than Seven until after I see Nine. because
that's fair.
I think that narratively, the way that like how this movie hangs is it's the middle chapter, and it's how the issues from this will get resolved in the final trilogy will affect my opinion of it. Like, I don't think I'd enjoy Empire so much if I didn't know that Han Solo is going to be fine. You know what I mean? You know, if so, I think that I'm not gonna like, because Episode 7 and Episode 8 are very different films because they are there to serve different tasks. Episode 7 is,
I get that, but well, I found right. more enjoyment from this.
Right? No. What I'm saying is that like I can totally understand your position. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying you're wrong to enjoy this more than Episode 7. I'm just saying, for me, I think that from a narrative point of view, in many ways, it's easier to be satisfied with Episode 7 for the same reason why it's easier to be satisfied with A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
And the same reason why it's impossible to be satisfied by The Phantom Menace. because the story arc is clear, and it's there to serve a specific thing. Like, it's there to introduce specific concepts while having a victory at the end. You know what I mean? Like, it's meant to leave, like, the first episode is meant to introduce the world and then give you a satisfying chapter at the end so you feel like excited going forward. And the middle chapter is much more about the meat of the story that you're currently telling. And this is definitely the meat. And I will, you know, so it's going to depend on the follow through. And if Abrams can pick up what Johnson put down, that's going to affect my long-term. But I will say that the new films all continue to be better than Lucas's prequels.
Agreed.
And and so
I'll say I only have one other critique, and it's something I can say without spoilers. I did kind of feel there were some pacing things that were weird, specifically that I couldn't figure out if the third act was just really stuffed or if the second act was really long. Like, I wasn't sure on that. But yeah. Other than that,
yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved it. Loved it, loved it, loved it. And I'll be happy to elaborate later.
Yeah, it's really like there's so much stuff that like I want to say, but the mastery of this film, and I think this is the important thing, is that everything that happens in it, there's no unimportant plot detail. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing. Like, you can talk about Episode 7 without spoilers a lot easier, because you can say that, oh, there's Rey, oh, there's Finn, and Finn's a former stormtrooper. Like, it doesn't feel like a spoiler to, even though you meet him as a stormtrooper and see him defect, like, it doesn't feel like a spoiler to say he's going to defect within the first act. Like, while this film, I feel like any sort of reveal like that, is, but anything that itself feels like a spoiler. And I think
I agree with that.
And I think that it's important to go in not, it's, I think it's more enjoyable if you go in not knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah, I was thrown for a loop by several things that happened. I was actually surprised.
Well, because the most spoiler thing I will say is that this film is in part about defying expectation.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I'm
going to
say.
It's meta that way.
That's
yeah.
all I'm going to say. And it, like, so, yeah, it's very Star Wars-y. And, well, I will, again, you know, and so thinking about what I can mention from the trailer, like, the sequence on the salt flats, because that's not snow, that's salt.
That was gorgeous. That was amazing use of visuals.
Oh my god. Like, that's just, that whole sequence is just so beautiful. Like, it's, I, again, you know, I go back to, This is the most visually stunning Star Wars film. I think mm-hmm. that this is a... I will probably always like Empire more. I don't know if I... You know, the problem is I keep flopping. Like, this is actually a really nice place to be where I can't... I'm having problems deciding my favorite.
Yeah, I'm going to have to reassess my chart again.
Like, when there are only six of these things, it was easy to say Empire back in the day. You know what I mean? But the fact uh-huh. is that I love this new cast and all the new cast, like, I love this new cast so much. Like, I am just...
I love these new films so much.
But, like, Adam Driver, Daisy Ridley's performance, John Boyega, I forget the actor.
Mark Hamill's performance.
Jesus Christ.
Oscar Isaac
is great, but the actress who plays Rose, whose name I can't remember, she's new.
Tran. Her last name is Tran.
Katie Fantran, I think.
Yeah.
But she's you're correct. She's great. I like her a lot.
Hell of a good movie for Carrie Fisher to leave on.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I'm still heartbroken that she's gone, yeah. but she left, but she got to end her career with Star Wars on a good movie, and
yeah.
that's
oh yeah. Laura
and
Dern's great
see,
in this.
I did see that Gary, her dog, went to see the film,
mm-hmm.
And his ears perked up every time she was on screen.
Oh, it's so sad.
And if that doesn't make you tear up.
Her real-life daughter had a pretty big part in the movie.
Yeah, no.
Like
it's
for one of the... I mean, she was essentially a glorified extra, but she had a pretty big part, all things considered.
Yeah. Cool. That's, And...
Her real-world daughter totally is sporting the cinnamon bun hair. That's how you'll spot her.
Yeah. Billy Lord, yeah.
Very cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's well, she's in episode 7 as well. So if you go back to episode 7, you can see her as a member of the Resistance.
Yeah, but she had a bigger part in this one.
Right,
that's
she does. But like, you know, if you're looking for her, you can go look up what her character looked like in episode 7.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's just I love the humor.
Some people complain there was too much humor in it. I don't see it. I don't see it at all.
I'm like, have you watched a Star Wars movie? Like, have you seen Empire? Empire is full of jokes. Empire is just full of jokes.
Well, you know, Empire was really poorly received when it first came out, too. So maybe...
Yeah, it's... Hux
it's
is...
just that again.
I love General... I like, General Hux is such a great character. Like,
He's Space Blackadder. I mean that in the best way possible, but he's Space Blackadder. He's so pompous and self-important that he's so easy to play against himself.
The opening scene of the movie involves, and so technically this is a spoiler, but it's like within the first 5 minutes of the movie, we start with Poe fucking with Hux over the radio. Oh, I swore. Crap. Demonetization. That was spelled with the PH, YouTube.
yep. There's some... I loved it. Loved every second of it. We should probably move on.
We should move on. But yeah. So go see The Last Jedi. Don't listen to the haters. And it's a complicated film. If you're looking for simple answers, you're not going to find them here.
Indeed.
Well, speaking of all of Star Wars, maybe someday we might get an official HD release of the Unaltered Trilogy. In part thanks to the $52 billion deal that went down between Disney and 21st Century Fox.
Yep,
Disney has acquired most of Fox's assets, including the film studio and most of Hulu. What they have not gotten are the...
garbage parts.
Yeah, the broadcast and news arms.
Yeah, so they get most of the cable channels, but not Fox News and not the sports and not the terrestrial broadcast networks.
So again, the garbage parts.
Right.
Yep, they just took all the good parts and just.
Well, it's so.
Just come on in.
So, by the way, how freaking confusing is it talking about this story when it's 20th Century Fox, the studio that is owned by 21st Century Fox, the parent company? Like,
I didn't even realize that. That's really dumb.
It keeps, like, I will tell you, writing this thing, like, it kept throwing me off about which one I was supposed to be writing in a specific sentence. Because 20th Century Fox is the studio. Yeah, so it's, Disney already owned 30% of Hulu, and this will give them, Fox's 30%, so they'll have 60% of Hulu. Because it was, Hulu, of course, was started as, like, 10% their own thing, and then 30% NBC, 30% Fox, and 30% ABC, which is Disney. So, and that's why everybody but CBS's first-run shows are there. So, the first, like, there are some antitrust issues, and so we don't know if this is going to get challenged.
A part of me is excited, but the other part of me is like, oh my god, Disney is going to monopolize entertainment within my lifetime.
Well, no, but it's also that 20th Century Fox, like, if you take a look at the big movies that aren't Disney owned, like, I mean, they're really the big the big movies that are not Disney owned have been put out, most of them have been put out by Fox. I mean, because Universal and Sony did a co-production with Disney for their, and then Warner Brothers is still out there, but Warner Brothers has a big movie, you know, tried to have more than one big movie, but really only had one good movie and one big success in 2017 when you really think about it.
I saw a great Image Macro in relation to this. That had the WB logo over Tony Stark's face, and then it's Thanos with the Mickey Mouse head on it, but with the lines from the Infinity War trailer. Yeah. Fun is rarely something I consider when bringing order to the universe, and dropping the 20th Century Fox logo into the gauntlet, but I admit this puts a smile on my face.
Yeah, it's like this is... Well, first off, this is going to do lots of things. So if you think about it, one of the things that keeps the Fox Broadcast Network's dramas profitable is the fact that they own their own studio. So they wouldn't have to pay as high a cost for the same drama. It's the same reason why when Supergirl was on CBS, it cost way more to produce some of that. Like, they made other cost-cutting stuff, but they saved a ton of money moving to the CW because the CW is owned by Warner Brothers. So they didn't have to pay the licensing costs for the characters once Supergirl moved over to the CW. Take that and think about now that there are going to be costs now that the Fox Broadcast Networks are going to have to pay for anything. So really, what you're going to see is a dramatic drop in the amount of scripted programming on Fox.
Hey, what about, does this also mean that Gotham is going to be screwed over? Because that's kind of the rival comic company.
Yeah, but do any of us really care if Gotham goes away?
Well, that wouldn't be a loss, but Lucifer would be a loss.
Oh, yeah, Lucifer's good.
Yeah, Lucifer's actually a good... That's one of the good DC shows that's not related to Arrow at all.
Yeah, no, it's...
And a show that makes me kind of sad, another show that I kind of wish Constantine could have crossed over with, because that would be a really logical crossover for him.
I don't know if their version of Angels are quite compatible.
True. I was just thinking characters I enjoyed from Vertigo and how fun it would be to see them together.
Well, yeah. It's,
But yeah, Lucifer's probably going to be affected by this.
I don't think they're going to cancel any shows. What I think is that you're going to see less new series. I think shows that are on right now that have pre-existing deals.
Please don't kill Ghosted. Please don't kill Ghosted. I like Ghosted.
I like it. but never to the point where I'd be bargaining for it.
Fair, but like I'm not watching a lot of things that are regularly broadcast these days, so
yeah,
like
it's
I like Adam Scott.
So that's what we're gonna see is not that they're is not that the existing shows will go away. I think what you'll see is less new shows being launched.
Probably.
Because any new contracts would then be negotiated with a separate studio instead of being in-house. While the pre-existing contracts will probably apply to the licensing fees that they're already paying. Also, it's important that like we'd have to go and look and see who's actually producing, like what studios are actually producing those shows.
Right.
Because Fox doesn't produce everything on their network. They just produce a large chunk of it. That's why you'll, like,
well, Fox
CBS, ABC Studios stuff on other networks and CBS Studios stuff on other networks because, you know,
I would say, yeah, Fox Studios did produce stuff for other networks, though. Like, I was, like, heck, half that controversy, I think it was earlier this year, maybe last year, about Last Man Standing, an awful show, by the way, but when that got canceled was because Fox wouldn't be footing the bill for it anymore, and they didn't want to keep paying for it.
Yeah. Well, and also, though, it's like there are some studios. Sony does a lot of television, even though they don't own a network. I can't think of... I don't remember what current shows are made on the Sony lot, but Community was, Glee. You know, those were both on the Sony lot. That's why those shows were able to survive being, you know, shopped around to other networks because the studio was able to shop them. But in any case, I think the funny thing is that like the immediate response from a lot of nerd blogs was, oh, and the X, like Deadpool could cross over with the MCU. I'm like, no, that's not what's happening. I mean, obviously that could, like, it does merge the IP and it does mean that pretty much they get everything back in the Marvel wheelhouse except Spider-Man, who they're working with the studio that has that. So they're getting a cut of that movie franchise. But, like, this is a terrifying media conglomeration where a huge chunk of the media we consume are going under one roof. Like, the only reason they're not getting the broadcast arm is because they own ABC.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah, this is actually scary, if you ask me. I don't know.
But they are getting FX, and they're getting FXX. They're getting, like, they're getting, like, everything except for the sports cable networks and and Fox News. And I think the new company that's being spun off to run Fox, like, Fox News is an awful, awful thing, but the people who watch it are gullible, so it's highly profitable. And then the sports stuff is all profitable too, so that's why they're holding on to those. But I don't know. I'm like, this is actually really kind of scary when you think about it.
Also, like, I'm gonna be honest. I'm not jazzed for the idea. It, as far as like just selfish, dumb Marvel crap.
Yeah,
I'm A-okay with the Avengers being able to fight Doctor Doom. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
Because Doctor Doom is Marvel's best villain. There, I said it, because it's true. On the other hand, the X-Men are completely incompatible with the MCU as we have it right now.
They are. They'd have to do a whole new version of every character. And considering Wolverine is effectively done in the X-Men movies.
I'm not even talking like the movies as it stands. I mean, the very concept of the X-Men doesn't effing work. Because it doesn't even work in the comics very well.
Yeah,
we've established in the MCU, people love superheroes. why would they be prejudiced against mutants?
Right, that's the whole thing. It's like, the X-Men I always thought worked really well as its own separate unit, like, as its separate standalone thing. Like, I think that, I always thought it was stupid that everyone's afraid of mutants, but they love Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
What? Everyone's afraid of mutants, but they love Captain America? What?
And the other Avengers?
Yeah. Who loves the Fantastic Four but is afraid of mutants?
This is the actual Marvel Universe.
Right, and it's easier to ignore in the comics because, you know, they're just, like, it's just easier to segregate in the comics. I don't,
yeah.
X-Men only works as its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when you try to integrate it with other superhero fiction, it's just a frickin' mess. Like, so that's why I don't want X-Men in my MCU. Never have.
Same.
But, you know, I wish that was the biggest problem with this merger.
Uh-huh, right? Yeah, I'm scared.
I will say this does this has an effect on Disney's online service plans, though, because they're now the majority owner of Hulu with this deal. Assuming it goes through, they become the majority owner of Hulu. And so
instead of starting their new thing, they should just...
What they're talking about is what they're going to do is... first off, this solves the problems that, like, where there are talks about Disney letting non-Disney companies create new Marvel shows because FX becomes part of Disney, so Legion's fine, and then Runaways is fine because Hulu is owned, now going to be mostly owned by Disney. But what Disney wants to do is make their new service that they're still planning on rolling out to be their family-friendly Disney service. So, you know.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
And while their adult programming is for the properties they own are going to go to Hulu.
I'm cool with that.
I'm mostly okay with that, but I like being able to stream Gravity Falls and Star vs. the Forces of Evil when I feel sad.
I love Gravity Falls so much. And they won't sell me the whole thing's not out on disc. The only way to watch that whole series is to watch it on Hulu.
That's frustrating.
Like, and yeah, I've got Hulu on every device and every screen that I own, but, you know, that could go away at any moment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the only reason I buy DVDs and Laserdisc. I almost said Laserdisc. I don't own a Laserdisc player. The only reason I buy Blu-rays and DVDs is because I want to be able to watch it offline. Like, and I don't trust services not to take things away from me because I've had them. Like, I was once watching a British series on Netflix that my wife and I were like 3/4 of the way through the series, and suddenly it came off, it went away. Now, that's back when we still paid for a DVD plan, and the show was on disc, so we were able to finish it using DVDs.
But still,
that illustrates, like, stuff just goes away, and so if I want to, like, Gravity Falls is a show worth owning.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
I think everybody should own Gravity Falls and watch it and live it and just exist in it. So it's, that's a little off topic, but I think it's, I'm worried about media conglomeration.
Same.
And.
Hey, speaking of scary things, though.
What?
Our next story features something absolutely horrifying to look at. So, I'm going to be honest. With all these American remakes of anime, it's been a pretty painful experience, all things considered. Death Note sure was a trip earlier this year. But I held out hope, you guys. I held out hope for Alita Battle Angel.
Why?
Because Robert Rodriguez was directing. And I like Robert Rodriguez. I like his action style. I enjoy that OVA. I thought this would be fun seeing Rodriguez do something. And then they announced that they were going to cast a non-white person as the titular character. And I'm like, okay, well, they're not Asian, but they're not white. So that's a step.
And then we saw the trailer.
Then we saw the trailer. And someone...
Face.
Some person thought.
What's wrong with her face?
So, if you haven't seen the Battle Angel Alita, I'm sorry, I keep wanting to reverse the words back to the original.
Because that's the name of the OVA.
Yeah, yeah. It's if you haven't seen the Alita Battle Angel trailer, you need to pause this podcast right now. Just do it. Then go find that. Watch it. And
feel the pain we feel.
Like, when I saw this trailer, I was so horrified, it didn't even register with me that there weren't any Asian characters in this trailer.
What the actual F?
Like, I'm going to hold it up for video viewers in my little window, but the CGI eyes are horrific, and this is so, like, James Cameron, who's producing this film and originally was supposed to direct, really wanted this, and so I don't know how much I can blame the director for this, but Jesus Palomino. So I haven't read the manga, but I've watched the anime.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they keep trying to justify it as to make her feel not quite human and all that, but I'm like, if you watch...
She's got robot arms.
She's not supposed to look unhuman. The whole point is that, like, not everybody even realizes she's a friggin' robot.
By the way, her robot arms in the trailer gave me some serious body horror stuff. Like,
I'm okay with the body horror part.
I mean, the body horror stuff should be in, like, the source material, yeah. But, like, when I saw that, my stomach lurched.
But you know where the body horror should just be, like, that she's a robot.
Right. Yeah. It shouldn't be that she has horrifying animu eyes.
Like, I'm sorry, anime eyes in real life are horrifying. They are terrifying. Yeah. Giant Cupid doll eyes.
There's a reason why we don't do that.
I mean, why? Why? Do not look at me with those eyes. Did not eat that delicious man.
Why, Nanako? Why do you stare at me with your child eyes? Yeah.
I mean, again, I was thinking I was gonna have to write a whole article about the whitewashing of yet another adapted anime film. You know, Ghost in the Shell, Death Note. No. No one cares.
Oh.
I think it's good
that
there are new...
That came out this year, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Jiminy Miminy. It was so bad I forgot it existed again.
Oh my god. Like why? They're talking, like, she's not supposed to look different than everybody else in, like, I would even understand it more if they gave everybody the horrifying eyes.
Right? It's supposed to be a bicentennial man type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's supposed to be a Stephen Byerly thing.
That's part of why she's so threatening in the cartoon, is that she just looks like a small woman, and then she rips robots apart horrifyingly. I mean, that's... Incidentally, you can still get the DVDs of the original anime for like $8 these days.
Yeah, I haven't.
Just saying,
I haven't watched it since the '90s, but I really liked it.
Just like, honestly, people, listeners, just go get that again. You can get it for like $8.
It's worth, like, you know. I don't know if it holds up because, again, I haven't watched it since the '90s, but. Like,
I watched the first episode like a year ago, and I enjoyed it.
Well, and so. Like, I just can't understand the eyes. They haunt me. Those are the eyes of the damned.
Mm-hmm.
It's really frustrating because, again, I actually like the director. I actually like Robert Rodriguez. I think he's a good action director.
Yeah.
I'm really sad that they went down this road. And I think it was idiotic. It's a real shame.
Yeah.
Yep.
God. It's like a nightmare made flesh.
The only good thing I can honestly say about that trailer is that it was still less embarrassing than Ready Player One.
Oh, Prozini's video about that's hilarious. That.
Anyway, we should.
We got the Ready Player. We got the. Ready Player One. I feel like it's just. Have you read the book?
That book that made me cringe. Yeah, there are parts where I cringed reading it. It was just so. I'm so not looking forward to this because the main character's main merit as a person, this is a plot point, is that he knows more about dumb nerd trivia than anybody else. He just knows more 80s nerd trivia than anyone else. That makes him special.
What?
I'm not crapping you. The premise of the book is the dude who invented the super mega internet dies, and he's like, when I played some video game on the Atari 2600, I thought Easter eggs were really effing cool. So I hid an Easter egg inside the mega internet, and if you know enough 80s references, you'll find it, and then you'll get $1 trillion and own the mega internet. That's the actual premise.
Yeah, well, no, I know that's the premise, but,
you actually get scenes where, the main character is talking about how, oh, yeah, then my avatar drove around in my DeLorean that I got from completing the Back to the Future stages on planet Zemeckis. But that wasn't enough. So I added the Knight Rider lights on front of it and the Ghostbusters logos on the doors.
I know that there are going to be listeners who disagree with you because I know that this is a book that's beloved by a lot of people, but I just, I haven't read the book. I just look at these trailers and I keep looking at I feel like this is a way to score nostalgia by saying, "Hey, remember that thing? Here's that thing. Hey, remember that thing? Here's that thing."
People kept throwing the new trailer at me. They're like, "Nick, look, the Gundam's in it."
No.
So?
No crap.
I can look at my shelf and see the ARC-78 Gundam anytime I like, and it's not just being thrown into a movie because, oh, look, the Gundam.
But, Nick, I thought you clearly didn't know anything about Gundam.
The listeners aren't privy to my amazing experiences working retail. I work in an anime store for the holiday season, and I had a customer tell me that I clearly don't know anything about Gundam. Their actual phrasing was, "I'm clearly not familiar with the franchise."
Nope.
How many Gundam are in the room with you?
In this room? There's only four out of box. No, excuse me, five. But then there's a bunch of the model kits that I moved from my parents' house that I haven't unpacked yet. So
in this room, which implies that there are more in other rooms.
In this room in my office that I'm in right now. Yes.
We literally once, as part of a panel, had a slideshow. We cropped Gundams just to the crotch, just the junk, and had Nick identify them. He got every single one right, even the random Transformer we threw in.
Yes, I can identify any mobile suit by its crotch. That's my secret, Cap. I know all the robot crotches.
You clearly don't know much about the franchise.
I'm just not clear enough.
Nope.
Okay, so speaking of crotches.
nice.
Oh.
Hitting it on the segues today.
Oh, so in the ongoing court case that between San Diego Comic-Con and Salt Lake Comic-Con, The jury finally did return a verdict in the trademark lawsuit. San Diego Comic-Con, Comic-Con International, and which runs San Diego Comic-Con, of course, claiming that Salt Lake Comic-Con, use of Comic-Con violated their trademark. Unfortunately for Salt Lake Comic-Con and the hundreds of Comic-Cons across the country, the jury sided with Comic-Con International and decided that Salt Lake Comic-Con was in violation of the trademark. Salt Lake Comic-Con has said that they were going to appeal the ruling, and to be fair, the jury, while San Diego Comic-Con was trying to go after $12 million, the jury only awarded them $20,000. But this could have serious implications for Comic-Cons across the country. You know, so, yeah, it's not great. Because Salt Lake Comic-Con, of course, has temporarily rebranded as Salt Lake Comic Convention.
I do not understand.
Okay, this is the problem. Well, Comic-Con clearly should be a generic mark.
That's what I mean.
So really what happened is that Salt Lake Comic-Con did effectively try to confuse San Diego Comic-Con attendees into thinking that they were associated, even though they're not. They used a lot of language that alluded to, like, implying a connection. They literally tarted up a car, a convertible, and with graphics. And we actually, I put, there's a reason why there's a car that says Salt Lake Comic-Con on the story. They drove it to San Diego and did, like, photos around San Diego Comic-Con with the Salt Lake Comic-Con car. It's like they were kind of being shifty about it, but the fact is that even though that they were being shifty about it, it still should be a generic mark. It's just Comic Convention. It's San Diego Comic-Con was far from the first event to use Comic-Con. Technically, their trademark is with the dash, which no one else does because of this. But the fact is that this sets a precedent that have been able to defend it, which means they could go after New York Comic-Con. They could go after now. And how does this affect the couple of events that do Comic-Con with as one word instead of two, like Phoenix Comic-Con or Emerald City Comic-Con? There's a lot of complicated stuff. But even, like, just within California with, like, Silicon Valley Comic-Con, literally, I could sit here for an hour listing events that, like, are called something Comic-Con. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because all it means is Comic Convention, and SDCC was far from the first one. It's not even their original name. So while Salt Lake Comic-Con aren't really, like, you know, the rosy protagonists who you'd want to be rooting for, there's a lot of good people this is going to hurt having this mark established even stronger. So, like, and I understand, like, if I was SDCC, I understand why they're suing, because they need to strengthen their mark. And when you have a trademark, if you don't defend it, it can become genericized. But the fact is, this should have never been awarded.
Agreed. 100% agreed.
And so, like, it's just, yeah, it's so it in all likelihood Salt Lake Comic-Con is going to appeal, but I think it's really dangerous for what this could do to other conventions that now SDCC could go after, and or at least demand licensing fees. They could do lots of stuff. And so, like, it's not good. It's not good.
Mm-hmm.
What do y'all
Yikes.
Think?
I don't have much more to say than I just agree with that. Like, that this seems insane to me.
Same hat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
Well, guess what? It's time to go to the mailbag, which means you get to talk about it more in our first letter, Nick.
Oh, yeah. Oh boy. Look at that. Okay. Open up the mailbag. More of this. All right. From our Justin Berger, SL Comic Con. While I agree that ruling against SL Comic Con will have some far-reaching negative effects, however, in this instance, I think the ruling is entirely justified. Salt Lake Comic Con founder Dan Farr implied in multiple press releases that he came from San Diego to start a new branch of Comic Con in SLC. Their original logo bore a striking resemblance to the San Diego Comic-Con logo, and then Salt Lake Comic-Con proceeded to invite themselves to drive a Salt Lake Comic-Con branded car around the streets of San Diego during San Diego Comic-Con. In any other case, I think San Diego Comic-Con would have lost, because they would not have been able to demonstrate damage or confusion in the market. But in this instance, Salt Lake Comic-Con went out of their way to do just that. So while I'm not a fan of the fallout from this court ruling, I think it's justified. I live in Salt Lake and volunteer for another convention. Yep. There we go. For another convention in Utah. I have a personal bias against Dan Farr Productions based upon my experience with that other convention.
Yeah, so... Again,
yeah,
no one's
not really much I can argue with that.
No one's arguing that that Salt Lake Comic Con didn't do a douchey thing, but
yeah.
it still goes back to the fact that it's not a trademark that should have been awarded. Yeah,
agreed. It scares me,
and
yep.
I think it's bad for the community. It's bad for lots of things, and I don't know. It's so complicated. It's, you know, San Diego Comic-Con is one of the few non-profit comic cons out there. So it's hard to, you know, make a call, because obviously Salt Lake, I believe, is for-profit. Most of the other comic cons are for-profit. As opposed to, like, science fiction and anime worlds, where things are much more non-profit driven. Yeah, it's just a myth.
Yeah, it's ugly.
It's a mess. So I don't think that San Diego Comic-Con should be able to have the mark. Like, and clearly it wasn't about damages. Like, let's go back to, like, yeah, it's, like, the jury did find, like, and yeah, it, like, that there was maybe some confusion in trying to do that, but they only awarded $20,000.
Right.
This for the jury was not about the symbolism. It was not about, like, it was not about the you damaged this company. It was about the ownership of the mark.
Right.
And it's clear that in their in the way the jury found, like, the damages awarded means that they think that the mark's the important thing, not the confusion. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's.
Big ball ugly is what it is.
Yep.
Again. Read another letter.
So I've got this other letter. It's from Langland. Subject, wow, what a week. Hey there, nerds. So yeah, the title says it all. This has been one hell of a week. That is, of course, the week of December 10th through the 16th, of course, which technically now is last week, but yay, dating the episode.
I mean,
well,
all the
I don't
episodes
know where...
have dates, so.
Well, I don't know where to start. I think let's start with Disney, because to be honest, they're the only company I plan to talk about in this letter. So yeah, Disney has bought the Fox Movie Studios, so that means the X-Men, Fantastic Four, Deadpool, and Silver Surfer, along with other Marvel properties I might have missed, are now back in Disney's hands. Well, this means that all those intellectual properties can now exist in the MCU. I don't know how that will work, honestly, but Marvel Studios will know how to make it work if they choose to go that route.
I have a feeling that these characters could go into future MCU movies after the Infinity Wars is done, and they could all coexist the same way the Guardians of the Galaxy has coexisted, minus the galaxy part, but still kind of a similar gist. Next part. I checked out The Last Jedi, and overall it was a good movie. I was disappointed with one thing involving my favorite scene in the movie, but since you guys are opinionated on this matter, you will likely disagree with me, but since I would be that would involve spoilers, I will stay silent. I have a feeling the last movie in this trilogy might actually be an original direction from all the other movies, because I feel this movie kind of made its parallels with both the Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. There's definitely a lot to plot twists and turns, which were okay, but some of them seemed kind of stupid, but that's just me. And I can't say because, you know, spoilers and all. It was still a good movie, and I hope the last movie in this trilogy finishes this trilogy strong. Well, that's all I got. I hope you guys have a happy holiday season. Regardless of the holidays you celebrate, just enjoy it. Have a good one, guys.
Yeah, like, we can't argue because, again, any discussion of that movie is spoilers. Like, it is so hard.
There's literally nothing we can say.
Yeah, like, it's just amazing.
Sorry.
Oh. All right, so... So, yeah, do you have any other responses to Lying On here?
I got nothing.
All right, that means we should move on to the Vomit Hat Steve Challenge. The Vomit Hat Steve Challenge is the part of the show where we read a line from a book, and the challenge to you, the listener slash viewer, is to guess what book it's from. Traditionally, I read the line, but last episode, Gen started us on a new book, and Gen will read the line when we get to it. If you guess what book it is, you get your name included in the Hall of Awesome. The benefits of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. 1, we put your name on the website. 2, we read your name aloud on the show. 3, there is no 3, it's a game. All right, so, and Corfan, I know you ventured a guess, but you were wrong. So, the current members of the Hall of Awesome are as follows. Arkhamite, Zero, Renan, Senti, Cheesy, McDaniel, Krista, Slithery, D, Shameless, Otaku, The Random Ramblings, Van, Corfan, Capito, Cursorium, Lilosaurus, Paper Godzilla, Cavsey, The Minnesota Librarian, Sean Orange, Keith Shizuo, and Sakura Sunset. And now, Genjamin Proc shall present you with your line.
In the vast pinkish early morning sky, the ball opened up in a huge spectacular display.
If you know what book that's from, go to nerdtech.com/contact, click on the little formy form, and tell us your guess. Or if you have anything else you want to say to us, have us read aloud on the show, or just genuinely talk about, go to nerdtech.com/contact, give it to us. Or you can call us at area code 414-375-0480, and we will play your voicemail. Leave a voicemail there, and we will play it on the show. It's super easy if you know how to operate a phone. If you do not know how to operate a phone, please get a parent to teach you how. If you are listening to the show and you need to get a parent to teach you how to use the phone, you have terrible parents because they let you listen to the show. All right, so.
Indeed.
So we should probably start to pull us to the end of this cul-de-sac that we call life. And
it's all over now.
I of course have been Traydorn.
I might be Nikizumi.
And I'm the Genjamin-iest Genjamin.
And remember, you can always follow us on social media at on Twitter, Tumblr, and Facebook. We're all Nerd Anti. That is NERDANDTIE. You can again find us at nerdandtie.com. You can follow us on, subscribe to us on YouTube if you're watching us there. The channel, if you're listening and want to find the video versions, is youtube.com/TRAEGORN. Or you can find Nick's video essays at youtube.com/Nikizumi. If you want to support our show financially, you can either donate, you can either sponsor an episode by clicking on sponsor information on nerdandtie.com. You can donate to our legal fund at GoFundMe.com/NerdandTie. Or you can contribute to us all directly. My Patreon is Patreon.com/TRAEGORN. Nick's Patreon is Patreon.com/NickIzumi. And Gen has a Ko-fi link, which is Ko-fi/Genjamin. And remember, you can follow all of us on, you know, all the social media as well if you really feel like it, if it's in your heart, in your soul, in your mind, somewhere deep down in places that you're afraid to talk about in the middle of the night, except you know it's there, clawing, trying to get out. So, you know, again, Twitter's your friend. Am I forgetting anything? Oh, yeah, subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, anything that can take an RSS feed. And, yeah, Nick, say your catchphrase.
Keep on spocking in the free world.
I think that worked. We're people.
I just learned there's a Pinata Emporium in Chicago, and I kind of really want to go.
That sounds great. I learned that Chumbawamba was doing music until 2012 when they broke up.
These are bonus facts that you got at the end of the episode, listeners. Hope you enjoyed it. Stuff.